Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Ah, hello.
We need a zinger to start the show.
Excellent. Are we going to get a bucket with chips?
Not that kind of zinger, JJ.
Huh. You said we're getting a zinger. What do you mean a zinger?
Don't worry. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to How to Build a Comic-Con.
Hello. We're doing two. I didn't know we were doing two.
Well, we were planning on doing about half a dozen, I think.
Are we? Oh,
yeah. Well, this is number two. It's been a while.
It has, but there's a lot been going on.
Yeah, I was planning to do one a week, and this is now about once a year.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a long podcast series. They'll have uninvented podcasts.
All going well.
I'm Simon.
I'm JJ. I had to think then. I'm JJ.
Nice to meet you, JJ.
Hello.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm not bad.
Oh, you had a very posh man call you earlier on.
Yeah, it was you.
Time for this. Well, no, posh, how dare you? Contrary to what people think. Right, so episode two. Ooh. I thought we could talk about...
Number two.
Last time out, we talked a bit about the specifics of how to... The history of Feel the Force Day. A bit more information about what Feel the Force Day was, where it comes from.
People don't know.
I think everyone knows, but it's a nice way to introduce everything. If they're listening to this, they probably already know what it is, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. And they probably came to the first one and every other one since.
Cool.
But I thought we could today talk a bit more about the details of how you plan an event properly.
Okay.
So we obviously do Feel the Force.
We do that, do we? We do it properly.
Well, I like to think so. One of people's favourite
events. Well, I think with this sort of event, you have to.
Well, you definitely do. Yeah.
It has to be done correctly, because everything, what's the word, is it counterbalances everything else? If you have one thing wrong, then it all sort of goes wrong. It's all got to be in uniform. Is that right? Am I just making these words up?
I think so, but that's okay. We'll work it out.
I know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean, I think. Anyway, so what I was thinking about talking about was if you were setting up a Comic-Con from scratch, doesn't have to be Feel the Force Day. It could be any Comic-Con. Let's say you're going to do a big London Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And you were starting from absolute scratch. How would you get it off the ground? Not in terms of like marketing and budgets and things like that, but more about ensuring that everybody who wants to come to that event could come to that event. So you start off with an event that's really, really accessible for everybody.
Yeah.
And then you build it from there. So what are the key ingredients you'd have to start with to get it
surely going? Would that not depend on the focus of the event?
Well, it definitely would, yeah.
So a lot of the London events, I would say one of the, not the main, but one of the main focuses is money, making money.
Okay.
And because of that, I might be digging a hole here, but because
don't get us in trouble.
Because of that, other things are not as important.
Which is ironic, really, because once you start making a decent amount of money, and some of the big shows, they make a lot of money.
Yeah.
They also have a lot of cost, but they make a lot of money. Once you've got a lot of money rolling in, actually, you can make it more accessible. You just have to accept that you're going to maybe not make quite as much.
But they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
As we know.
Which is why we exist.
They put a handle in the bathroom.
I got one of those.
We're both at that age.
That's the joy of being middle-aged.
That's what they do.
All right, so then if you were starting from scratch, let's say you're running one of the big Comic-Cons and you've got the money, you're all right, you can afford to do it, money's not an issue, but you want to get it started and you want to make sure you're doing it right, what do you need to think about when you're getting going? This is if you were starting, this is for really an instruction guide for anyone who wants to start their own Comic-Con.
Right, so you need a big enough space.
Okay. Like what? So let's talk about... our experience of spaces that we had, because obviously we started at the PSL Club, which was probably slightly bigger than my downstairs loo. not designed for the number of people who came. No, it wasn't intended to be for the number of people who came.
No, it was offered free, which is always a winner. Anything that's offered free. It didn't need to be adapted for any disabilities because all I had originally in mind, it was for 20 visually impaired people. So they would be guided. They didn't need special toilets. They didn't need hoists. They didn't need wheelchairs. So it was...
Yeah, it would just be people who were walking in and walking out. And it was going to be, 20 people just talking about Star Wars, understanding about the film.
Feeling some toys and costumes and then going out.
So we had 400 people come to that event, something like that.
Yeah.
And...
should have been 20.
Should have been 20. Which meant it was a brilliant day, but it was also completely inaccessible.
Yeah.
Really. You know, stairs out the fire exit.
The toilets were not disabled toilets.
Toilets weren't even big enough for me to be.
I don't think
honest.
You could physically get a wheelchair in them, not without a struggle.
No, not at all. So it was.
But we didn't know this until the day.
Well, it's about learning on the way, isn't it?
So until the queuing of. Because the capacity was only 250 people, wasn't it? I think, or 200.
Something like that.
So we had to let some in.
Some in, some out, some in.
And
some
keep
out,
the rest outside.
Yeah, that's it.
Which again wasn't practical.
I remember us talking about how we'd make it, the second event, much more accessible and what we'd need to do in terms of venue space and how we'd be able to manage flow of people and that kind of thing. On the proviso that we might get 1,000 people the second year, which obviously we then got over 2,000 people the second year. But that's, the venue was big enough to host them. When we went over to Kingsgate, we've suddenly got this massive space.
It was ridiculous.
With a huge stage, big open space, massive auditorium seating, and then rooms around the side where you can put other things in. And then there's big space out front for vehicles and everything like that.
It was never ending.
And it's much more accessible, but it provides a different challenge of trying to connect everything up so it becomes accessible.
Even now,
way.
People say to me that they didn't know the side rooms were there.
It's funny, isn't it?
Which is bizarre, because I thought that
we
was
did
a good
do a
thing.
Map.
Yeah, we
I
did.
I spent
do
ages
map.
Writing that map up.
And a lot of people seem to go in and just go in the main hall.
Yeah.
But a lot of people that couldn't cope with the main hall, they're the ones that wandered off and found the rooms.
Side rooms, yeah. That's it. So that's kind of the point, isn't it? So if you think about a big London Comic Con, they're huge and they sometimes do have side rooms. Some of the buildings that they use do have those sort of spaces.
You've got to pay extra to get in, though.
You have to pay extra to get in. But they're often. I remember taking Matt to an event. I think it was in Nottingham, and just everywhere we went in at this particular event, you'd go, Matt in his wheelchair would be blocking half of the aisle.
Yeah.
Because you're
not having a day out.
Space for him at that
I think it's the same event that I was at with Jimmy.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And it's a nightmare.
Yeah. And so you've got if somebody wants to look at whatever's on that stand, Matt has to finish looking and move on to the next thing. So when we were looking at, because that was a much bigger event than ours.
Yeah.
But there's an innate sort of accessibility that isn't built into that or wasn't built into that particular event that we could then build into ours instead.
I think one of us had to walk round to the front to get permission to then go back and go into a side door.
To go into a staff lift.
Yeah.
To go up a level and then
because
up,
the rest
and then
of
pass
it was
some stairs and then down a level. I remember. Yeah.
And then we spent the entire event just managing with being at that event. We didn't look or enjoy ourselves. It was just move out the way, get over here, get through here. And when you walk down an aisle, people move out the way, but then you've just got a clear path straight down the aisle. You can't look at any stills.
You're not seeing anything.
Because everyone's moved out the way.
Yeah, exactly. So we could build something around that idea when we did the first big Field of Force Day, because we were after that, our first big one. And so we could look at... how do we ensure that there is space for people in wheelchairs
what we
to
need
get around?
Get rid of that.
Rather than having some kind of grid system where people, had to sort of march around in a circle or a square to get past all the stalls and that sort of stuff, we kind of went, well, just make it a free-for-all. Just create a space that people almost crowd around.
Yeah, because in the Kingsgate originally, didn't we have, the marketplace quite round the edge of the atrium?
Yeah, so we went... Well, the original idea was no stands at all, wasn't it? And then we sort of got involved with the guys at the council.
Yeah.
And we brought in a lot of the public health stuff and the social care stuff. And they had stands around where the food was.
Because we feel it was important. And then it would also attract, what's the word? not trap them, but it would get them. It would be in the right place where they needed to be. They wouldn't normally just go out and look at them stalls because they're not very appetizing.
I remember working with a friend of mine at the council and putting on an event that was all about health and health action planning and things like that for people with learning disabilities.
You're fat, your teeth are manky.
That's what it ends up kind of being. I remember looking at this and going, they got about 250 people came to the event, which is really good for one of those events. Mm. You don't get that many people at an event like that, because frankly,
if you tell them they're getting a free bag and a free pen, they all turn up.
Well, yeah, but to an extent. I mean, but who wants to go to an event that just tells you how unhealthy you are?
They do that every day with appointments.
Exactly.
That's what they're doing.
Here you go. So, Steve, producer Steve.
Yeah.
If I said to you, would you like to come to an event where we can tell you you've got high cholesterol and you need to lose some weight? What would you do?
Of course
you wouldn't. You wouldn't
it's
turn
not
up.
A day
there
out,
you go.
Is it?
Producer
it's
Steve
not a day
wouldn't
out.
Turn up. And nor would I. And to be fair, I've got my health check tomorrow, so I'm going to exactly an event like that.
Brilliant.
But that's another
That'd
thing.
That'd be nice.
So the point was that, all right, they did well to, in its own context, to put an event like that on. But I figured if we could almost trick people into having that kind of interaction with something they actually want to be at, you'll get better input. So we did, and we got, I think the first time we did that, we got something like 2,500 interactions between the stands that were there.
And that's brilliant.
And the people that were coming.
Because they're more relaxed and it's not being forced on them.
Yeah, exactly that.
You just weave it in.
So you can go and...
It's like eating a chocolate-covered rice cake.
Chocolate covered rice cake. They're terrible and yet they're still tasty.
You're eating the rice cake and you're getting
Feel the Force Day to one of the least favorite.
Yeah, that's all I can think of. I'm trying to think of something clever, but you know my limits.
This bit out.
No, it's nice. It can't be a. But you've got the bit that you need and then you've also got a bit of a.
Yeah. So, there's more of what you want at Feel the Force Day than there is the bit that what you need.
We don't sell rice cakes. Maybe next year.
No, not doing that. Craig and Caroline will beat me up if I make any cakes again. So my thinking was at that time, I remember when I was a kid with Matt, you know, we'd go out and we'd have a lovely day as a family.
Mm.
And then we'd come home and the problems we had when we went out were still the same problems when we came home, even though we'd had a nice day.
Mm.
So my thinking with Feel the Force Day was, well, what if we introduce some stuff that you can come and have a nice day, but while you're there, you might also actually solve a problem. You might actually be able to make contact with the person that was able to help you solve your thing about your carers or solve your thing about your health interaction, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
So that you come home with a solution or at least the startings of a solution.
Yeah.
That. And that was my thinking. So, and we did that in the first year in place of the sort of commercial stands and merchandise and things like that. And only really brought that in the third year because people...
Because like you say, originally we weren't going to have stalls.
No.
And then we discovered by talking to people that the guys tend to save their money and bring it along to spend at Feel the Force Day.
So then it's about how do you introduce those commercial elements to an event that you didn't really want to be commercial anyway, you just wanted people to have a nice time.
Yeah.
Without it then becoming what a large Comic-Con is, which is basically a market you pay to get into where you go and look at a load of overpriced tat.
And the everyday
Joe. And then you queue up for an hour to meet somebody who won't remember you once they've met you anyway.
Yeah, well, it's all them. It's all the elements. So it's the collectible stuff that is boxed and sealed and expensive, which is fine. You know, these things have got value. But if you're blind, you can't feel stuff. That's not overly practical, especially if they're charging a lot of money for it. I went to a con at Nottingham. Jimmy wanted to meet Lou Ferrigno, who was the original Hulk, because that's one of the things he can remember from when he could see. So to queue up was to pay for a photo with him, which was £80. Not happening. Jimmy don't want a photo because he can't see it. So I marched to the front of the queue. And he said, well, you've got to queue up. You've got to buy a photo. So I explained the situation. He's deaf and he's blind. He just wanted to shake your hand and maybe feel your muscles to prove that it's you. Else you could be the baker from up the road. Could be anyone.
Yeah.
And then the bloke from who worked for the Comic Con, said, oh, no, if you buy a signature, it's £100 and something, and if you have a photo. And then Lou Ferringo stepped forward and said, we'll take this over here.
Just come on in.
And he took us behind a wall and took a photo.
We've had a few people who've done that over the years, haven't we? I remember Jason Momoa did that with Matt and, pretty much everyone.
Well, I'm guessing their moments like that, they just take over.
Well, that's the bit they probably will remember. Whereas, if you've got a queue of 1,000 people coming to meet you, and you're going to stand there and have your photo taken and shake their hand, are you going to remember number, 752?
No, you're not. And it's, someone like Jimmy that can't see a photo, he's not going to pay 80 quid for it, and then he's not going to pay £150 for a signed picture that he also can't see.
So it's all of these kind of accessibility limitations that we experienced with Matt and with Jimmy and other people as well that we know that kind of got us onto, right, well, how do we do this right? How do we put Field of Force Day on in year two? Because, you can think of year one as it's a different event. Something very, very different. It wasn't intended to be what it is.
It was a seed.
It was a seed to something much bigger. Yeah. But year two is where we go, right, we've got something here. Let's see what we can do. And honestly, the only bit that's really similar is it's got the same name. Yeah. After that, it's a completely different event. So how do we put on the first big Field of Force Day and go, all these things we know and we've learned from going to other events and the problems that we've spotted or the issues that people just won't be aware of because how can they be unless they live in that kind of world?
Yeah, well, they're not, are they?
How can we, as far as we can think, mitigate all of those issues? And there's always, we don't get it right every time. We know that. But we try our best to learn from it afterwards. But every time, we find a problem and we solve that problem, the next problem that comes along becomes so much more subtle or complex that you couldn't have thought of it in advance. No. You just have to live through it, find a response to it, and work it out from there.
Yeah, learn and do it, yeah.
So I guess the question is, that we're trying to answer in this one is, if you were starting a Comic-Con from scratch, how would you do everything that we tried to do at the beginning the way that we would do it now? And create a Comic-Con from scratch that is big, accessible, and ideally profit-making for the organizer, because that's probably the biggest problem for a lot of these things. Once you start factoring in some of the accessibility and you reduce the number of stands so you've got adequate space and you put in place, a Mobilu, for example. Mobilu, they're great. They provide a great service, but it isn't cheap to hire one of those in.
And that's a lot of money for a poo.
That's a lot of money for a poo. And it might only be used 3 times in a day.
Yeah, that's normally me.
I know, absolutely.
I'll go and just swing on the hoist.
you see, we ended in the same place. So if you're starting a Comic-Con from scratch, what are the things you need to know? What wisdom can you and I impart onto the person that's starting their own Comic-Con?
You need to sort of deconstruct it before you construct it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you need to take the elements. So let's go with stall holders. So it's okay having stall holders and they can sell anything, whatever they want, as long as it's, Comic-Con-ish. But certain stall holders will do better if the items are affordable. You've got to bear in mind the guys that we have come don't have a lot of money. If we've got somebody that's visually impaired, if stuff's in a box, they might want to get it out the box. So therefore, secondhand stuff's better because it's normally loose and in a bag so they can feel stuff. Jimmy, in particular, going back to visually impaired again, and this isn't just Jimmy, this is other, might want to smell items. Because he will gauge the age of a toy by smelling it. So if you tell him it's old and he don't believe you, if he sniffs it, he will then. So we might want to smell stuff. So it's just taking all them little things and making sure that they work for the audience. It's okay having new stuff. It's okay having expensive stuff.
But it's got to be something that is accessible to people.
Well, of course.
If you're Jimmy,
you've got to think
blind,
of the audience.
There is no point. I've said this hundreds of times over the years, but there's no point having a 300 quid model of the Hulk in a plastic box that you're not allowed to get out. That's no use to Jimmy. What difference does it make to him?
Even if he's got 300 quid, he can't.
Exactly.
He don't know what it is or what it looks like or what Hulk it is.
So it was always about ensuring that those stands had things that were actually accessible in terms of, people would want to engage with the materials that they're being sold.
Yeah.
You know, but also that they were affordable.
Yeah.
And also that they were something that could be actually enjoyed before they bought it, so they knew what it was they were actually buying.
And no, you know, if they're looking for something in particular, once again, if it's in a box, they're not going to know, you know, because there's not just Batman, there's different Batmans, there's different Hulks, there's different...
I'm learning.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you're not just buying a Star Wars figure, you're buying this one or that one or...
From this film at that point, at this time and that one, yeah, over
there. If they're after certain things and they can't see them and they need to be able to feel them, they want to make sure if they're spending the money, they've got the right thing. We had a lot of second-hand stuff at this year's one, I noticed. A lot of the stalls up the right-hand side had a lot of figures that were out and loose and everything else.
So that's kind of stalls, I suppose. Yeah. That's your, you know, but that's only a small part of what I feel the Force Day event is.
Oh,
said earlier on, it's, you know, we could produce what a mainstream Comic-Con really is, which is basically a giant market. You pay 30 quid to get in, and then you queue. After you've looked at the overpriced hat, you then queue for an hour, 2-3 hours to go and meet someone famous who won't remember you.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been my bugbear with them, is that it's the lack of personal touch
that really
bugs me.
A lot of the guests that we have, we either try to meet them beforehand or get across to them the sort of event that it is. So we try and meet the guests in advance if we can, just to see what they like and how they are with some of our guys, Matt or Jimmy or
Jonathan, or
if they talk to them or the carers.
That's a big one. Do you know, there's an old cliche of, would he like sugar in his tea?
Mm.
A number of times people have asked me over the years.
It's a classic.
Matt's there, I'm there, and they look at me and say, does Matt want sugar in his tea? I don't know, ask him. Well, he does have sugar in his tea.
I remember.
Piss off and ask him.
No, I don't think I was there for this one. This is when Matt met Momoa. But I think that the same event, he also met... Oh, I'm not going to be able to...
Is it Lenny James?
No, it was the bloke from Doctor Who, John Barrowman.
Oh, yeah.
And John Barrowman ignored the carer and just spoke directly to Matt, and I think Matt come away in tears.
Yeah.
Because he did that. He was rude to him, he was rough, he was telling him to bugger off and this, that, and the other.
Just, well, I do that.
Just playing about, but he just spoke to him.
Yeah, that's the key kind of, have you got people who really get, I mean, this is quite quite specific to our event, given the nature of our kind of... the guests that come to our event, but the nature of the people who come to our event, that we want guests who really understand what that is.
Yeah.
Guests who appreciate that, you know, you might be talking to a person with a disability, and you might be talking to a person with a disability you cannot communicate with, like my brother, like Jimmy.
Yeah, yeah.
To a lesser extent, but still true, like Jonathan.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's going to take you weeks or months to understand their language and how they speak, but you're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Because even though you know that you can't actually have a full conversation with them, you're giving them you're treating them with the dignity that they deserve to be able to engage with them as a person rather than the carers around them. Because, I mean, I again, another bugbear of mine, number of professional carers I've met, using quotation marks on professional there, where I see them, they treat the person that they're caring for with a level of almost... disdain, or a level of almost like that person's a burden. So I'll use Matt as an example, although he's never had a carer like this, but just so I'm not giving away any information about other people that I know.
Yeah.
Where go to a party and his carer says, right, Matt, you've had your food, it's time for shift change, we're going to get out now. And off we go. And Matt ends up getting dragged off after about half an hour from one of his oldest friend's birthday party.
Have they asked him
if he wants to go?
No, they've just made
their decision because it's their shift change and they're going home.
Yeah.
It's not about the person who's at the centre. No. So we did things like we put in place carers tickets, which were free and on an honesty basis. So you didn't need to book them in advance. And we still do this. Don't need to book them in advance. You just turn up with the carers you are bringing for the day. Tell us they're your carers, and we give them a wristband, and in they go.
Done.
And we anticipate that, you know, there's going to be a decent number of people who are going to be in that position. And we also anticipate that sometimes someone's going to take the mickey.
Yeah.
And we'll probably lose a few quid on entry tickets that we could have had. And there's, you know, I've had conversations with friends about this where they've got involved in the event and sort of said, well, you'd make more money if you had a tighter carers policy. And I go, but if we have a tighter carers policy, it undermines the point.
Yeah.
Because if you make the carers free and you make it as easy as possible
easy.
And you put in place the accessibility features like the Mobiloo, so there's no excuse to leave the event because somebody needs a toilet and you haven't got the facilities.
That's what happens.
Then
we need to go now.
We need to go now. They need changing.
They've got no excuse
to go. You've
got
a place over there. Go and get changed. Go on.
That's why we introduced, at some point, we introduced liquidised food.
Yeah.
Because, there's nothing to eat. We've got to go home.
Yeah.
You've got no reason to go now.
Well, that was always it. So, at this point, let's take a quick break.
Oh. Okay.
Go and get ourselves some rice cakes.
I'll have a wee.
And rice cakes. Okay. You can have a wee if you want. It's up to you. Go and have a rice cake and a wee, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a bit more.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello.
Hello. We've moved.
We've moved. And apparently this sounds a bit better according to the producers.
We've been kicked out.
Well, we have, but that's because somebody else had booked the studio. But at least there isn't a band playing with Pop.
Yeah, no, she's nice. She's nice out here. We've got carpet and everything.
It's lovely. It's very, very nice. No air conditioning, though. The other room had aircon, but that's okay. Right. Did you enjoy your rice cake?
It was delicious.
And how was your wee? Don't say
probably
delicious.
Tastier than the rice cake, in all fairness.
Yeah, fair enough.
Right, where was we?
So we were talking about how we select the guests that we want to invite to the event. And obviously we want guests who are... sort of keen on people with disabilities. I can't think of a better way of wording it than
that.
So think kind of understand what people with disabilities need
and understand the event.
And we've had amazing guests over the years, and we talked a little bit about that last time out, but we've also had some guests that will not be getting an invitation back.
We won't mention their name.
But
there's not been many.
I don't really want to be sued. But there's been a few that, like, either been really, really rude and clearly either didn't get it or didn't care to get it.
No.
Or basically just took the mickey a bit. And
I think a lot of them turn up and don't bother to understand the event and therefore assume it's going to be London.
Yeah, and I think they're slightly disappointed when it isn't, and they're not walking out with thousands of pounds in income.
Yeah, exactly. They make £4.50.
Yeah.
And don't get £25 for a selfie.
Yeah, which is, on principle, I don't like the idea that you charge for a flipping selfie anyway.
No, but I understand, you know, it's a that's thing, their choice because of why and how they're there. You know, we don't.
Yeah, so we have the guests at our event have
I don't know what I can say and what I can't.
Well, so they have a relative amount of independence, so they set their own prices for their photos and things like that. And we try to explain in advance that this is a different kind of audience that you'll be working with at this event. And most of the time, people we've had come have been really receptive to that. The odd occasion you get someone who they just didn't read the memo or they didn't get it.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've ever had anyone that I would, I'd absolutely never want to ever see again in any circumstances. But we've had some that clearly didn't get it over the years. And some who seem like they don't get it, but actually they genuinely do. And they're doing it on purpose because it's all part of an act.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, that's your kind of nasty Nick's, isn't it? Where he's in character the entire time and he seems like he's a really grumpy old man.
Everyone
that's why I like
him.
John Outman so much.
Everyone loved him
because he's just such a funny, the whole thing is kind of, that's his stage persona.
He got on well with you. He scared the living daylights out of me.
Well, he will get on well with me. That's because I'm a bit like that as well. Kind of keep a straight face until the very last minute. But
Yeah, no, we have done well with guests, considering.
We've had some amazing people. I think we've really punched above our weight over the years.
It's a new area. It's not something that's out there, whereas here it's tenfold. You know, you're not going to have the odd disabled person. You're going to have all of them.
Yeah, every single person. And I think, but the main part of our event isn't really about the guests. It's not really about the celebrities as such. It's more about the guys in costume.
Yeah.
Because that's the big difference, I think. If you go to, again, big London Comic Con, you're going to be coming across lots and lots of people in costume, but they are going to be the audience as well. They're going to be people who are turning up, buying a ticket and coming in, but they've got dressed up of their own volition, with the exception of maybe some invited costume groups.
Yeah.
When you come to our event, the guys in costume, pretty much all of them, I mean, there might be the odd exception where someone's come along in their own costume, but pretty much all of them are by invitation because they are there, because they are the main attraction.
Yeah, they are the main pull. If some of our audience would walk into a room and sat on the left is, obviously not now, God rest his soul, but David Prowse, who was Darth Vader, and then on the right-hand side was Bob the Plumber from Swaffham, dressed up as Darth Vader, they would go to Bob the Plumber.
Every single time.
Dressed as Darth Vader.
Yeah, because that is actually Darth Vader.
Because to them, it's real.
And to be honest, as far as I was concerned, it's the same thing. Because when we started out, I mean, we've talked before, I'd never been to a Comic-Con before the one that we organised.
Yeah.
That my first Comic-Con I ever went to was Feel the Force Day. Which means the entire time I've been doing this, I've been learning about all the different sort of fan culture and that sort of stuff. I remember sitting in the pub after we'd done the first one, and one of my neighbours said to me, I see Mark Hamill's doing this new thing over here. And I went, who's Mark Hamill? And he looked at me who are you? I'm like, I don't know who you're talking about. He went, it's Luke Skywalker. Oh, is that his name? Oh, okay.
Yeah, well,
because I was never bothered.
I think we've educated you slightly.
Yeah,
since then.
I like to think I've taught you business and you've taught me sci-fi.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, but that we can't emphasize enough how important the costumers are. That's why we feed and water them and try and look after them as well as we can, because they are the main pull.
Yeah, that's it. That's the main part of the event is the people in costumes, because you can pay 25 quid for a selfie with somebody that won't remember you tomorrow, or you can actually genuinely make the day of somebody who's spent a lot of time, money and effort to come to our event dressed as a character they genuinely admire, put on the show all day long as that character, and when you come up and you're so excited to see them and have your photo taken with them, you are absolutely making their day. So it's this completely symbiotic relationship between the costumer and the visitor, in that one person's having an amazing time because they're meeting Darth Vader, and the other person's having an amazing time because they are Darth Vader.
Yeah,
which is just an amazing thing to see in action, and it's not something I would ever have. I never thought I'd get into a business like this. If I'm completely honest, I never expected.
That happen, and that's what keeps you doing it.
That's it.
It's that what lights the.
There's your magic.
Yeah, definitely. Totally agree.
So I'm just aware of how long we've been doing this. And same rule. The research I did said you need to do between half an hour and an hour.
Okay, so how long we got?
Well, as long as we like, because I can edit it.
Right, okay.
Steve might throw us out at some point because he'll probably want to go home.
What about the venue? The venue?
Thanks, mate.
What about the venue? Have we covered a venue?
So let's talk about practical tips. Let's do a few like key things. Okay. Let's do the venue.
Yeah.
Let's do the stalls. Yeah. Practical tips, like two or three key points.
Okay.
The guests.
Yeah.
The costumers.
Right.
The price.
Okay.
And then any bits and bobs you need to think about
any
in terms of
business.
Extra kind of any other business, as if we're in a meeting.
Right.
Welcome to Planning for
the Venue. The venue needs to be accessible.
What does that mean?
You can get in a wheelchair, and not just any wheelchair. Some people have massive wheelchairs, like a tank.
Well, we have people come in a hospital bed, don't
we? Well, yeah, we've had that. Yeah. So there's got to be space.
Absolutely.
We're not talking one or two wheelchairs at a time. There might be between 50 and 100 at any point.
Easy.
We don't know.
Yep.
So space, toilets, got to be able to have a changing room or a changing place or a mobile loo or something that offers that facility of people will go home.
Oh, including my brother.
Who, yeah, yeah.
If he needs the toilet, if he doesn't have a changing place, he ain't staying. And that's my own little brother, so it has to happen.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be there. Right, anything else? Stuff's got to be able to be touched.
So that's stalls now. So we're talking stalls.
Yeah, so we're talking stalls and maybe exhibits to a certain degree. They haven't got to be touched by everyone, but we'd like them to be touched if they need to be touched.
Yeah.
So it can be roped off, but if you get a visually impaired people that asks, is it, can I touch it? Then they are allowed to touch things.
I think it's preferable that things are not roped off, but there is a, inevitably some of these things are quite expensive.
Of course.
And so inevitably the people who own them, because we don't own hardly any of the stuff that's at Hill of Falls Day, inevitably the people who own them are going to be quite protective of them. And you do get some people who are like brilliant and they just, come on, free for all. Any damage gets done, we can fix it. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I can understand when someone's spent, I don't know, the DeLorean's a good example of that. Because when they come to the events, they are, I think, I don't know how much you could buy a DeLorean for, but I reckon it's going to be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands pounds with all the stuff done to it. I have no idea. But
and then a lot of the time they don't get that visually impaired people feel to see. They think they're just going to start breaking everything.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had that at times when people have been told not to touch because they're worried it's going to break it. But
yeah.
I mean, if you see Jimmy trying to understand how something looks, it is literally just touching things with his fingers and understanding the shape.
Well, he's gentle. He's never broke anything that I've been aware of.
So in terms of stalls then, it's all about having things that are tactile and accessible to people so that you're not looking at that 300 quid model.
No, and that's not just the items, that's the prices. You're going to sell more if it's a reasonable price. If it's £1,200, then you'll be taking it home.
Absolutely.
If
it's £20, you might sell it.
Yeah, yeah, you might do, because we know now that people bring money to this event, which is lovely.
So I remember... I don't know how true this was. This, again, another big London Comic-Con thing that is there. And I remember they did some market research on their customer base and how much money do you intend to bring and spend at this particular event. And I remember the figure being, on average, your average customer was going to spend 350 quid at that event in one day.
Because you have a lot of stalls that have stuff that's imported or, you know, whatever. And if someone's looking for something in particular, which a lot of collectors are, they want this figure or that figure, then they will take the money and they will pay for it. They won't tell their wives, but they will.
I did a similar bit of market research for us a few years back. I'm not sure I ever told you about this, but it was really for my own benefit to understand. It helped me make decisions as to how much people would spend at our event. And it isn't 350 quid.
No.
It's barely 35 quid.
I was going to say, between 20 and 30 quid, I think.
At the max. So, you know, once you've borne in mind that someone like Matt lives on benefits his whole life, someone like Jimmy lives on benefits his whole life, he might save up some money to come to the event, but, you know, it's a big swing for him to come and spend some money like that.
Yeah.
Things have to be accessible in terms of cost as well.
Yeah, of course.
So there's your stalls.
Yeah.
Have to be accessible in terms of physical access and the cost of the items.
Okay having dearer things because some people will have money, but you're not going to sell anything if everything's expensive.
No, exactly.
But I think we had stuff there this year ranging from like a pound upwards. We had a stall that came that I invited, and I see they was in a craft stall in Market Square, and I got their number. They were selling like painting kits with little plaster of Paris models, and they were like £1, £2, £3. There was nothing over a fiver, and I said, I want you at our event because it's ideal when all our guys do craft stuff.
Yeah,
so I don't know how they did, but
it's an important
life
skill. I do it all the time now.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, I literally fixed aeroplanes for a living, and most of it is just cutting and sticking.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably didn't want to know that, did you?
Well, I see that, and I was like, hang on a minute, that's great. Look, that's £1, that's £2. There was nothing that was over a fiver. I said, I want you at our event.
Yeah. So that stalls then. So cheap, but not necessarily you know, unbearably cheap. You can have some more expensive stuff, but you need to understand your audience. But it has to be tactile and accessible to everybody that's there as part of it. Otherwise, there's no point in being, particularly at our
not at all.
What was the next thing we were going to talk about?
We'll be done. We've done venue, we've done stores. Celebs.
So let's summarise celebs then. So if you're having celebs there, you really have to do a bit of a recce of that celebrity. Go and see them at another Comic-Con. Go and see what they're like and how they interact with someone, you know, like Matt or Jimmy or Jonathan or someone else.
Take our stunt crew up
there. Take our stunt crew up there.
Wheel them forward.
I remember Jonathan meeting Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
I mean Sigourney Weaver, they obviously.
They get all the best jobs.
I remember him going and meeting Sigourney Weaver with Mandy. And
but they had to pay to get in there.
They did have to pay, but that was because she was in a separate room and you didn't go in unless you had a ticket.
Yeah.
And it wasn't cheap. It was like 100 quid or something, wasn't it? But they did it and they went in. And apparently she was absolutely brilliant with it.
Yeah, well, she held the sign up.
Yep, got the sign, got the photo.
She had a sign saying that she wouldn't do that. And then Mandy asked her and she did it.
Yeah, there you go.
That was her decision.
Yeah. And so, a number of big name celebrities you've done that for us over the years. That's amazing.
Well, look at Great Scott.
Oh yeah, Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah. So we had security out at that con watching us.
Yeah,
trying to get him to go the other way.
Yeah, and out he comes and comes and
he just walks straight past.
And there's a picture of me and Matt giving him a cuddle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
amazing. And he was saying all the lines from Roger Rabbit and Matt was laughing his head off.
Yeah, I don't think he remembers Roger Rabbit. He remembers Back to the Future. He probably remembers Jessica Rabbit.
It was one of the... I bet he does.
Yes,
I think we all remember
her. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, that was magic because he was being told not to and he just...
Just did it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, we did loiter. Yeah, I remember.
That's what you got to do.
I was packing up all the gear and there you are at the other end sort of hanging around where he's going to come out with Matt.
That's what I do with Jonathan. We walk around and I just kneel next to Jonathan and point at the celebrities.
I was thinking the other day, it didn't work quite so well with Weird Al Yankovic at 3 a.m. outside the Hammersmith Apollo.
No, he didn't come out then, did he?
No, he came out in his bus and we saw him broken down on the side of the M25.
No, but it worked for, who was the Doctor Who who's in the thick of
Capaldi.
It? Yeah, it worked for him.
He was brilliant.
Me and Jonathan were stood there pointing at him, talking about him, and he comes straight over to Jonathan.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't sign my tea towel, though, did he?
No, it was downstairs. No. We left it.
I can't believe it.
We didn't know we were going to get to meet him. It just happened. The same with Biff Tannen. He came over as
amazing.
Well.
Yeah, yeah.
And spoke to Jonathan.
I think, so basically what we're saying is that you've got to do a bit of a recce of the guests to make sure that they are up for it.
Yeah.
There's no kind of, you can go and, you know, cold call. Sheila Reid was a cold call from me to her agent, where I found her agent online and just emailed them and said, you know, I'd like to invite Sheila to this thing, please, and would she come? And she came, and she was amazing. But honestly, that can be hit and miss.
Yeah,
we've had other people in the past
and also,
who were
if
not.
If you're getting
like
agents involved,
then there's a big, big expense that goes along with that, which we won't go any further.
I think a lot of the time, because there's no money involved for them.
Yeah, I mean, that particular agent was really helpful and they just sort of connected us and then she agreed to come. Yeah. But, you know, most of the time it would be there's a £5 million finder's fee or something like
we
that.
We have regulars that help us now. We had some guys that helped us this year that had not helped us before just messaged me and said, you know, I can offer you so-and-so.
Yeah.
And that's just a better way for us to do it, easier.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's guests. What was the next thing?
I don't know. I can't think what they
were. I've got my list.
All I can think about is rice cakes and having a wee.
Not again. That's the diabetes. So the next thing we wanted to talk about was money.
Best of luck with that.
Yeah, no, that's kind of my department, isn't it? That's where we get into. So the thing to remember about Feel the Force Day is it doesn't make any money.
No.
And in fact, this year we actually turned a small surplus on the event. And it's immediately been spent on next year anyway, so it doesn't really count as a surplus necessarily. But it was, it's never been something that's a profit making entity. I think what I'm really saying is even if you are running a big one, the cost and the potential profit goes up together.
Yeah.
Well, so I remember sitting there and we were at a particular Comic-Con and there was a very, very famous actor who I won't say the name because I don't want to give away which Comic-Con we're at. I'm not criticizing anyone, but I'll tell you. You'll understand in a second.
Yeah.
Very, very famous actor in front of a setup that was designed around the very famous thing that they were in.
Okay.
And people had bought tickets to have their photo taken in this sort of setup with this actor.
Okay.
Right? And the actor's quite elderly. He must be in his 80s now, maybe a bit older than that even. And he was stood there for half an hour and the photo flash went off, and I counted this, every 9 seconds. And the ticket to have that photo taken was about 130 quid. So that's 130 quid every 9 seconds, which sounds like an immense amount of money that the company's making when they're doing that particular photo shoot. And it is. Mm. But the cost of getting that actor over in the first place would have been, I mean, a first class ticket from wherever they live. Let's say it's Los Angeles. That's about, you know, £6,000 each way. The cost of their hotel, which would have been a nice hotel.
Yeah, of course.
Plus all the travel in between. That's, you know, you're probably talking another few grand for that over the weekend. And their daily rate, I've had quotes for very famous actors before who might be available to us of £100,000 a day to come to our event. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I could sell my house and then maybe.
Not happening. But, as much as we'd like them,
yeah,
it's not happening.
So anyway, my point is, if you walk into an event like this thinking that you're going to walk out as a millionaire, Rodders, then you're going to be in for a very, very hard-hitting surprise.
Yeah, it's
because there
like
is no money in this business.
No.
And there's particularly no money when you have to cut your profit margins so that you can ensure that the event is fully accessible to everybody to come.
Yeah.
So it has to be done on the basis that you're doing it out of love. And that's
essentially where we got to. It's more about the heart than it is about
absolutely.
The wallet.
This is the sort of stuff that I've said many times, I'd love to do this for a living. But there's never been enough money in it for it to be something that, you know, I could do for a day for a living.
Because, well, every year we put the money up to get in because we have to, not because we want to.
Well, the costs go up, the price
exactly.
has to go up.
Yeah. The first one was free because that's how I wanted it. And I would like them all free. But as they've grown, we've obviously needed bigger venues. And therefore, we have to pay for bigger venues.
Yeah, so the first venue was free.
Yeah.
The second year, the venue was, in the thousands. Not lots of thousands, but enough thousands for it to be a stretch for us. Then that progressively got more expensive over time because it does. And you acknowledge that. And we were always getting a really good sort of deal with them, and they were always helping us out. But
And
then we went to the showground.
I didn't sign it then.
No, we can say the showground. They closed down. and the bill went from, you know, I think previously it was in the... It was, I think the whole event in 2018 cost about 16 grand to put on for the day. And actually we turned a small surplus that year as well. One of the only times we've done it. I think we walked out with about £2,500 for the next event, which we immediately put into the next event because the next event at the showground cost 40 grand to put on for the day. And so that was where...
and you had to pay a lot of that.
I think, I was watching the numbers. I had all the spreadsheets on my computer and all the different payment systems that we had. We had Stripe and PayPal and all that sort of stuff set up where we're taking payments from people. Plus there's money going in, donations going into the buckets to go to the charity, and that's going to help pay for the event as well and all that jazz. And I'm watching the numbers go up and I'm looking at the time and the numbers are going up. But the time is going up quicker. And I'm just going, we're not going to make it. We're going to be short. And in the end, we were about £10,000 short. And so I had to put that in myself. That's how we paid for the event. I put the last 10 grand in. And I'd already, you know, we've talked before about I'd put some money in the first few years as well to top things up. Basically, whenever we've had a deficit, I've always covered it. But that was the one that was like, oh, that hurts.
Yeah, that was a beast.
Yeah.
And it was, I didn't like it.
No, well, so I was going to say this. We go back to 2019 and all the things that we said we didn't want, a marketplace that you pay to get into, where we had a marketplace that was massive in a grid that people had to wander around, that you had to pay to get into.
It had no soul.
It lacked the noise was unbearable because we couldn't afford to have the curtains up. The curtains were £15,000 to put some sound deadening curtains up. And it was like, that takes the price from 40 grand to 55. I can't do it.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Just for some curtains. So the noise was...
15,000. That's more than £600 for a poo.
I know, absolutely right. Well, I think it's 300 quid for a poo at the moment. Right, but it's important.
Well, still, yeah, of course it is. Yeah, I'm not saying it isn't.
You know, the costs went absolutely bananas. And in the process of going bananas, the event just lost its soul because then you've got to make some money.
It was horrible.
If you're pushing yourself to the extent that you've got, you know, you're walking out of that with a £40,000 bill minimum. right?
Yeah.
You know you're walking out, you have to make £40,000 for this event to work.
It's not happening.
Right? And you're sitting there, I cannot explain to you the stress I was feeling when I'm going, holy shit, I'm in a hole here. This is going to be painful.
Said shit.
Yeah, well, it's a podcast. You don't need to worry about that. No, Ofcom shit. Have no power here. That's right, isn't it, producer Steve? Yeah, he's nodding at me. He's nodding at me. When this goes out on the radio, if he puts it out there, he will have to bleep that, but, or edit me out, but yeah. So yeah, that's how I'm sat there just going, you know, I loved the way that we played the event out to Purple Rain by Prince. I loved the after party bit that we did. Didn't love the 2 o'clock in the morning still breaking down the event on our own because nobody else was going to. Us and the volunteers didn't love the bill at the end of it. No. Just, yeah, and that's the point I'm going.
And then there was just so many people that moaned about it, said, oh, it weren't very good. Blah, oh, blah,
do you know what? I got so fed up with people saying, oh, Kingsgate was better. All right, put one on at Kingsgate then. Go on. Thanks very much.
Yeah, especially now. Yeah, best cheers. Of luck with that.
Good luck with that. It's like, just, do you know what? If you don't like it, thanks. I'm happy to listen to your constructive feedback, but I'm in a hole for 10 grand here and I just worked for 18 months to pull it off. So, you know what?
Yeah.
So, anyway, my point really on the money side of things in terms of making an accessible event is don't expect to make any money. Don't expect to come out of it as a millionaire.
Because we're not a London con and we don't do it for that.
And even if you were... You know, if you're hiring a venue like Olympia for a weekend, last time I checked, and this was years ago, a venue like that's about £300,000 to rent. You know, if your venue's 300 grand and your top celebrity is 100 grand a day, you're in a hole for a couple of million quid by the time you've done an event of that sort of scale. And you need to make that money back. So that 130 quid every 9 seconds is suddenly not looking like very much.
Yeah.
So that's my bit of advice in terms of money. Don't expect to make any. Expect to be spending some.
That'll never be asked because that's not accessible.
Well, exactly, it isn't. You couldn't park Matt up in a decent position in 9 seconds.
No.
So,
No.
You'd never have his photo taken like that.
No, that's a very good point.
Yeah. So.
No, by the time you get the chair in there and then the battery breaks or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just manoeuvring him in would take more than 9 seconds.
Yeah, and that'd mess him up. That'd get him all riled up, I can imagine.
Yeah, exactly. What we've seen.
You're
happen,
wasting time.
Yeah, well, we're not. This is how long it takes. Yeah. That's what accessibility is.
And that's
is.
The difference.
Yeah. Right, so the last thing we were going to talk about was any odds and sods, basically. Bits and bobs that people need to know. So things like, we've talked a little bit about the cost of a ticket, but we've always tried to make sure that the ticket is affordable, at least as affordable as we can make it.
And we've always kept the carers free.
I'd strongly recommend to anyone trying to do something like this, having an honesty-based policy for carers, it sounds really counterintuitive. You think people are going to take the mickey and you're going to get rinsed. And probably we do. Probably people do take the mickey.
And that's fine.
But that's okay because on balance, if you're trying to do something accessible, then you just have to accept that that's a fact of life.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't go out of our way to make people feel guilty, but they do have to explain to us, you know, on the door, oh, I need 6 carers. Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, tell us about that.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to challenge them that hard, but you do have to sit there and tell someone who's working with the charity why that charity isn't
places,
getting that money.
Some bigger theme parks that will need photographic proof. They will need a doctor's letter.
Yeah.
They will need various cards to prove this, that, and the other disability. They will need photos. They will need, and it's a right proper bloody rigmarole. You get there and you're an hour signing in. And then when you get in there, the person you've taken can't go on any bloody rides.
I had someone the other day said to me, well, surely you just show them that you're a carer. You show them your registration as a carer.
Right.
I went, what registration that I'm a carer?
Yeah.
Like, what?
There ain't
there isn't no card you can show them?
No.
I've been a carer since I was 2 years old.
You have to take doctor's proof.
I can't prove I'm a carer, apart from the fact that, you know, if you meet Matt, you can kind of see that I might have to be. A carer... legally is situational. It's not, there's no one's going to give me a pin badge, not since Matt Hancock tried it in the pandemic anyway. And even then you had to pay. But yeah, there's no card or registration system that says I am a carer. So there's nothing you can do. Do you remember we tried to do with, we did for a good while, other Comic Cons where we'd give people sort of tickets for their Comic Cons and a few of them signed up and we were sort of distributing them on the basis that, you know, people could supply us with the information and we would be quite sort of easygoing about what they were supplying. Because, you know, you here's a good example. You can only have a carer's ticket if you can supply your blue badge on the day. All right, great. So what do I do about my car that I've just had to park to get to the venue?
Yeah.
Because now my blue badge is with me and I'm about to get a parking ticket.
Excellent. Well done.
Number of times I've heard that one.
Yeah.
So we were doing it for like other Comic-Cons to help them out as well. And that did work a bit for a while. It was a lot of work, but it did work. Yeah,
but if we weren't doing it, were they doing it?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Maybe, maybe. Anyway, so that's Yods and Sods. Anything else we need to think about?
Nothing I can think of, really. I'm sure there is stuff, but nothing that springs to mind.
Okay, well. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, you know, risk assessments,
insurances.
Right, okay.
I'm going to be doing a lot of talking now, aren't I?
Yeah. Right, so health and safety.
Health and safety, then.
Risk assessments.
And insurance.
And insurances. These are all words that mean nothing to me.
Yeah, well, they should.
I know. Well, they do now.
Just to be clear, you are equally liable if something goes wrong as I am. I just have the responsibility of organising it.
So when the first one started to get a bit panicky and I realised there was going to be a lot of people there and I was like, oh, and someone said, have you got insurance? And I really didn't know what they meant. I believe after finding you and then the event starting, now, am I wrong in saying that a curtain row fell down on somebody's head?
It did, yeah. Luckily, that's not our responsibility.
Within the first hour of the event.
Yep, so for a curtain rail, they were at the event and they leant on the curtain, but they sort of leant and sat on the curtain onto a radiator.
So they pulled it, yeah.
So they kind of pulled it and they pulled it out of the wall and it's quite a tall curtain. It must have been like 3 meters high.
Yeah, yeah.
With the big brass curtain rail at the top. And it immediately was ripped out of the wall and fell on them. And they were fine. No class action was started.
No.
You know, I'm not in prison for a health and safety violation, but it did happen. And so the implication of that is if you had not had insurance.
Yeah.
And you're on the hook for it as the organizer.
Yeah.
Then you're on the hook for the cost of the payout if someone gets injured. You know, but yeah, that's exactly the sort of thing. That's like within half an hour of the event starting, someone's already had a curtain rail fall on.
And it's not that I didn't think it was important. It was just stuff that I didn't
have a clue how to do it.
It's out of my remit.
So insurance has always been a tricky one because you can get absolutely ripped off with insurance. And also a lot of it, you have to make a really informed estimate. So if you
sometimes we don't know what's coming.
Well, exactly. Exactly. So I'd like to, case in point, we were at the showground.
Yeah.
And I'm just wandering around doing whatever I'm doing at that event. And the health and safety manager for the showground comes up to me and says, Simon, can you show me the risk assessment where you assessed any risk around a roller skating circus performer on the stage hanging onto a rope by their teeth? I said, what are you talking about? She went, well, that's the act that's just finished on the stage. And I'm like, I didn't know they would be doing that. I didn't say they could do that.
They just got
on the stage and did it. And I'm like, was anyone injured? No. Right. Well, let's just walk away and we won't do that again. Honestly, where did that come from?
I had knives thrown at me 1 year.
I know. I remember.
I didn't know that was coming.
I had organized that, but I did pay them to hit you. It's things that just like this, the stuff that comes out of left field. You do spend a lot of time kind of guessing what the worst case scenario could be for. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't possibly have predicted a roller skating circus performer running around in circles and clinging onto the rope by her teeth or something like that. That's just what the fuck? I don't know. I don't think that's a sentence that's ever been said before, if I'm completely honest, but yeah, that kind of thing where you go in.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what sort of thing could we have on stage? So the only option really, as you become more experienced in doing this, is to go, well, let's just tighten up what we're doing. So we do now a lot of stuff around. We have, you know, Eddie manages the stage. So you don't get on that stage unless Eddie has pre-approved you and Eddie's run it all through us and said, this is what my running order is going to be. And he knows what's going on.
We both work on that through the year.
You don't bring a vehicle onto our site as a display vehicle unless you run it through Nick. And Nick knows, you know, these are the vehicles we want and you check with me first. And if you just turn up with a vehicle, we're not letting you in.
Same as we had a pat dog this year and that was all. Obviously.
Pre-checked, everything's right.
All, can't just bring all credentials any dog there. Buy a harness from eBay.
Turn up with an XL bully and rip someone's arm off or something like that. Yeah. I mean, basically, it's the as far as you can, you try to control the things that you can't possibly know you need to control. And you do that through having a decent set of sort of decision-making protocols. Your volunteers are informed and experienced.
Yeah.
You know, Nick has been doing the vehicles now for about, what, 5 or 6 events, mm-hmm. something like that. And he knows exactly what he's looking for. He's got all the contacts. He knows the reliable people and he'll go out to them to get them.
And because of the nature of the day, we do get a lot of stuff turn up last minute.
Yeah, of course it does.
That we don't always know is coming or was coming. Or so we, you know, we work around it and deal with that when that happens. We're not going to turn stuff away. But you don't always know that they're going to be there. Sometimes, you know.
Exactly. So I guess what I'm trying to say really is expect the unexpected.
Oh, yeah.
And prepare for it. And that's the point is as long as you've got sort of a well, so I've said this to our volunteers loads of times. I don't want people who are going to work with us who are going to question themselves. Mm. I need you to be able to make a decision. And I will have your back, at least publicly. If I disagree with the decision you've made, we may have a conversation afterwards. It's not going to be me shouting and screaming at you. It'll be a conversation about, you know, how could we have done this differently? What do we think could have been a better decision-making mm-hmm. process? But at that moment, I'll always have your back. So you make the decision you need to make in the context that you're making it, and it will be the right decision for that moment, and maybe in hindsight we could have done something differently.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of approach I've always taken with our volunteers is, you know, you are empowered to take this on. But ultimately, if something goes wrong, I'm the one who goes to prison. You're the one who goes to prison if there's such a massive health and safety problem that somebody gets really badly injured or dies.
I'm not picking up your soap.
Well, no, I wouldn't want you to either. You're not my type. But yeah, it's that sort of, that's the responsibility you have. If you're doing an event like that, ultimately your responsibilities are, you are responsible for everybody's well-being on that day. And if you've not done something right, the potential is, it's a very extreme potential, but the potential is you end up in prison for a health and safety violation.
But luckily, we've got an amazing team.
We do have an amazing team.
Hurrah for the team.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we manage.
So that's it. So probably think that we could end on here is a massive thank you to all of our volunteers.
Yeah, definitely.
Because actually, there's no way...
No.
This is not the Simon and JJ show. I mean, it's not even the Simon show ever, really. It's JJ's show. But anyway.
That's not my choice.
No, it's everyone else's. It's just because you're just better looking than me, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
So, this isn't the Simon and JJ show. This is Feel the Full Set.
No,
it's bigger than all of us.
No, we all do this for the same reason.
Yeah, just because it's a good thing to do. And
and it makes
do you know what?
Difference.
The smiles on people's faces at that day just makes it all worthwhile every single year. But the stress of getting there sometimes makes me wonder, if I'm completely honest.
But at the moment, we're in a good place. So,
but with our volunteers, they are absolutely fantastic. And I've named a few of you, but there's many, many, many.
Yeah,
many
we can
more.
Look into that another week.
Yeah, and we might
when
bring
we do
some of them
three.
In. Number three. So that'll be sometime in 2027 at this point. Brilliant.
Hopefully not.
Right. Well, it's been good to talk to you.
I knew it's
thank
been,
you.
It's been a
thank you for coming
today,
into my lovely
loads
studio.
Of, loads of big words. Today.
Yeah, I thought so. We're going to get into some technical stuff going forward, but I think it's nice to just be able to show people the way.
Yeah. Oh, get you.
There we are. Yeah, I don't look like Jesus for no reason. Anyway, good night, everybody.
Bye.
Have a lovely day. Bye bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.